Hello and welcome to the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I'm Joel A. Erickson. I'm joined by Nate Atkins. We are kind of in the middle of a weird lull in this season. Shaquille Leonard was placed or reportedly had season-ending back surgery. That would normally be enormous news. This season, that qualifies as like a fairly relaxed day, considering the last 3 weeks. No one was fired or benched or anything like that yesterday. So a fairly quiet start to this week.
Was benched a couple days ago. That was the latest fire.
Yeah, but that was a couple days ago. We've already written about it. We've already talked about it. It's already happened. We didn't have anything on Monday or Tuesday that was earth-shattering.
They're just keeping in their quota of one a week because he was the starter for the rest of the year, and now he's not.
That was earth-shattering. So we've got it's a little bit quieter the first 2 days of the week. Nate, what's your mascot? Nate Clark pointed this out to me. Nate's been killing me on these.
Well, you shamed me too badly the first couple weeks when I didn't have them, so I had to stock up. But we got a little unicorn right here.
Where did you get that?
I don't have kids, so
that's the scary part.
And it's not a dog toy, but I'm going to pretend that it is because that would make more sense. It's probably going to be torn up by my dog here soon. But this little unicorn is Jonathan Taylor, who is a unicorn. He's one of one, and he's gone away a lot this year. And remember, there was a podcast I did where I buried a horse in dirt, and that was Jonathan Taylor when he was
can't get past why you have this unicorn. I need to know. Why do you have a unicorn?
Because we have a mascot show, and it was very important to be prepared. You have to stay ready so you don't have to get ready.
Nate's either making purchases for the podcast, or he's had a stuffed unicorn in his house the whole time.
You know what?
I'll let the listeners decide which one they think that is.
It's hard to explain on the expense reports for work, but we'll worry about that a little bit later. The point is, the horse has come out of the dirt and he's shown to be a unicorn this week. AFC Offensive Player of the Week, Jonathan Taylor, and I know you love that Offensive Player of the Week award. It's going to be the biggest honor of Jonathan Taylor's career, I'm sure. But it is
the dumbest award in football.
But it is.
Actually, that's not true. The FedEx Ground, the one that everybody votes on. Those are the dumbest awards in football. This is the Player of the Week award is the dumbest, it's the dumbest actually NFL-sanctioned award.
Yeah, it's kind of silly. But it does show, I'm shocked that a Colts offensive player won that with how their offensive line has played this year. But this week, they finally did what we suggested.
What if I told you they played the 32nd ranked defense at DVOA?
I'm still surprised. This week they got the dirt off of the horse. They actually blocked enough to give Jonathan Taylor a chance. Yes, they faced a bad defense, but actually the Raiders are not a terrible run defense. They're terrible against the pass. And really it just showed you what Jonathan Taylor is. And he's still not fully there. He hit 20 miles per hour on that 66-yard touchdown run. That's 2 miles per hour slower than last year, and that's still his fastest of the year and one of the faster in the NFL because that's how high-end his top gear is. And they just had to give him a chance. When they give him a chance, what happens is he goes out and he runs for 147 yards and a touchdown, and it just eased everything back into it. And finally, this is the first week that the Colts looked like they had the model that they promised Matt Ryan. It took half a season. It took a firing of multiple coaches. It took a benching and then bringing him back once he realized it was a bad decision. But finally, they kept Matt Ryan clean, only one quarterback hit and one sack. They run blocked. They let Jonathan Taylor get out there. Jonathan Taylor ends a drive early with a 66-yard touchdown run. And Matt Ryan did not complete a pass of over 15 yards in the air, but finished 21 of 28 for more yards than they had in either of the past two games without him. And so ultimately Jonathan Taylor, the difference that I've always said with him when he can be himself and he has a chance and he can run confidently, he can get to the edge, is that if you block a run for 15 yards, you know, a good cutback, a good vision can maybe get you to 30, 35. Jonathan Taylor has that breakaway speed to then turn it to 65-yard touchdown run. And what that does is it eliminates any need to score in manufacture offense in the red zone when the field gets tight and when this team has such a tendency to turn it over and mess up in the red zone. That drive right there, I think it wasn't the game winner, but it was the one that was the first time I really thought they were going to win that game, is when they finally got Jonathan Taylor out and free and they got the unicorn back. And what's amazing is that as bad as this year has seemed from a run game standpoint for Jonathan Taylor, for them overall, he's averaging 4.7 yards a carry, which is obviously below last year, but it's still pretty good and amazing for this line. And he's on pace, if he plays the final nine games, to finish with like 1,300 yards. And it's that's how good he is, considering how bad the offensive line has been from the start of the year to now.
I'm going to describe this unicorn for the listeners who can't see it. Number one, it's stuffed.
Yep.
That's important. Number two, it has an earring.
Couple earrings, yep.
Oh, it's got two earrings. Okay, I couldn't see the other one. It's got what appears to be like a really long, like this is a female unicorn. It appears from the hair.
Hey, I don't like assigning gender to it.
It's got yellow. It's got yellow either hooves or shoes. I can't tell
like
what
golden
it's supposed
boots.
To be.
I think they're more like golden boots.
It has
boots.
A crown, and then the other color on it that's not brown is a like teal? Question mark?
It's got a teal
like
little
a really
horn.
Light, like a dolphin color, like the Miami Dolphins color.
Yeah.
And then the other thing about this unicorn that you guys need to know is the tail looks like it's for a beaver. It doesn't look like a horse tail at all. It looks like it's for a beaver.
That's true. I've never seen a horse tail quite like that. But, you know.
You really should have opened this by just saying it was your dog's toy. Because
it's going to
become
that.
Now the listeners and I are going to wonder a lot. Because I don't think you went and purchased that. I don't know where you would have found that. You forget, I do have kids. I'm buying toys a lot right now.
Yeah, and that's why always was an unfair battle, is that you started this mascot thing and shame me when you're bringing in kids' toys. Like, I had something to just easily go and match that with. So I go out and I be creative, and you're giving me crap for it. You know what? This is – I'm proud of this purchase, actually. I've had way worse purchases than this little unicorn.
The question is when you made the purchase. That's what concerns the listeners and me.
It wasn't this week, I'll tell you that.
There it is. We got it out of him.
I actually purchased it back when I did when I buried the horse in dirt, because I wanted to connect these things. That was actually the other thing I was going to point out
is that when you buried the horse in dirt, the horse's head was still out of the dirt and there was no horn on it.
True.
So the Jonathan Taylor
wasn't the unicorn back then. His ankle was hurt. He wasn't running confidently. He wasn't playing well. Now he's back to unicorn level. And who knows? Maybe that's the power of Jeff Saturday. Maybe he brought the unicorn.
So definitely the power of a healthy ankle. They played him 61 snaps, so they must feel pretty good about his ankle. I don't have to do much explaining. I will say this. My original idea for a mascot this week was better than the one I actually brought, because I was going to bring in my kid's toy French fries and for Will Fries, who played well at right guard. He got one chance before in the season, and it must not have gone well because they weren't playing him very much. But he played well, kind of helped solidify the line. Again, we need to see it against a better. But my wife has apparently thrown that away. There was too much fake food in our house.
Oh.
And I didn't want to go by a restaurant and get any fries. It's too early in the morning for that. We're taping this at 10. I just didn't need the smell of fries.
You just got to wait for Wesley French to start playing.
Instead, mine is also Jonathan Taylor related. But instead of comparing him to a unicorn that you've owned since you were six, mine is.
I'm gonna assume you've owned that since you were six.
Mine is Superman, which is what Jonathan Taylor looked like last year, and hasn't looked like much this year because his ankle has been afflicted by kryptonite. But
that's why he's struggling to stand.
I have no problem. Superman is my favorite superhero. I have a part of my desk at home that's a little bit like Jerry Seinfeld's shelves. This is actually my kid's because it's bigger, and we need to make sure it was big enough for camera. But when Jonathan Taylor's going good, he can be Superman, and he looks like Superman. But we hadn't seen that again. Maybe kryptonite affected his ankle. Could be magic too. That's the other weakness. Yeah, it's kryptonite and magic. Those are the two weaknesses for Superman. But it's also going to matter this week, because if you look at the Eagles' defensive stats, the Eagles they weren't super susceptible to the run on Monday night. I was flying back. I didn't see most of that game. I know Washington ran it a ton, but not very effectively. It was like 3 yards a carry on 49 carries. But over the
course, a lot of yards after contact.
Over the course of the season, Philadelphia has been much more susceptible to the run than the pass. And so I think, if that was the thing that you can carry over from the way the line played, given that the Raiders were better against the run than they had been against the pass, then you'd hope that carries over again this week against a defense that, if I remember what I looked up right, they're second in the NFL in pass yards allowed and yards per attempt. And they've got a ton of interceptions, a ton of sacks. Their sacks are kind of inflated by a 9-sack game against Carson Wentz and a 6-sack game against somebody else. But this is a team that can get after the passer. So you would need to have – you're going to need Superman, I think, if you're going to beat the Eagles, unless you get 4 turnovers like Washington did. Anyway, so I brought in Superman. Again, favorite superhero. I have no problem with admitting that. Fine.
It's kind of fitting too. And you said that the mascot you were going to bring in is better than the result. Like the idea ended up being better than the reality. That's like the story of the Colts offense this year. when they sold Matt Ryan on this offense, the idea was amazing. Offensive line dominating and a healthy Jonathan Taylor and a team that wanted to go all in and get him what he needed. Hasn't come together yet, but this is the closest they've been to it because Jonathan Taylor does look like Superman. The offensive line is giving him a chance to run in the open field. They're getting the kryptonite away, which is bodies falling on ankles. And, yeah, this could be the start of something, but we'll see because, yeah, it's a huge, huge difference to go from blocking the Raiders to blocking Jordan Davis and what the Eagles have up front.
Jordan Davis is not available. That's the other thing. That's the other reason that I believe he's on IR.
Okay.
So that's the other reason that you think it's probably a run game is that the Eagles lost Jordan Davis recently to injury, I believe. And so you'd assume that that's how you're going to do it. We can talk about this. This is probably a good place to start the podcast. Also, I got a shout out to Nate. I think Nate's real superpower isn't the mascots. It's the explanations. It's the explanations and the choreography. That's the real key here is the execution. And the Colts offense on Sunday, whether it was the Raiders, whether it was that that bringing in Jeff Saturday fixed everything, whatever it ends up being, what we saw on Sunday is what the offense was supposed to look like. It's what the offense was supposed to be this season, where it's balanced. Matt Ryan has time to operate and can be efficient. I think the one play that probably wasn't in there was the 39-yard run by Matt Ryan. I don't think anybody had that game plan for the Colts this season. But other than that, the rest of what we saw, I think, was pretty much what the offense was supposed to look like this season and has been taken away from them by the offensive line. I still want to wait and see. Getting Matt Pryor out of the lineup clearly helped. But again, and I want to bring this up because it's why I'm being a little skeptical and slow playing my belief in the offensive line. He played 12 snaps against New England. I believe they had 6 more sacks. I believe New England had 6 more sacks after he went out of the lineup. So getting Matt Pryor out of the lineup is just as big as everybody says it was. It's not a perfect fix for everything that's gone on with this offensive line. And it's why I want to see how they play against, the Eagles this week. The Steelers, if the Steelers are at full strength, the T.J. Watt next week. Like, there's some really good pass rushing
Micah Parsons, Danielle Hunter, Joey Bosa.
Yeah, there's some really good pass rushing defensive lines coming up and defensive stars. We saw that this line can neutralize one star. But there's some deeper defensive lines, deeper pass rushing units coming up. And it looked great for 1 week, but it's against a team that has 10 sacks, which is something like 3 or 4 or 5 fewer than anybody else in the NFL. Before you get too excited about where the offensive line's headed, we got to see him against these better defensive lines.
Yeah, and I think another thing that helped this past week was the change at quarterback when it comes to sacks. Is some of those against New England were – Bill Belichick got in the head of Sam Ehlinger in just his second career start. And by late in that game, he was holding the ball and trying to make things happen that weren't there and just wasn't trusting any protection, which is kind of how Matt Ryan played early in the year at times, which is why he got sacked and fumbled as much as he did. But something was different this week. I don't know if it was Matt Ryan realizing the moment, the weight he had to get back on the field for the first time in his life, but he was just so quick, and it just, there weren't many plays that were close to being sacks. He didn't really hold the ball a lot. And what also happened is the turnover risk was kind of gone. Outside of that sack, there wasn't a single play that I felt like he was flirting with danger, which is kind of what's new. But also, maybe it's not all that new, because I went back and looked. There's been two games this year where Matt Ryan has had zero turnovers. It was this past Sunday, and it was the win over Jacksonville. So that's two times in 3 weeks. And then the one outlier was between that was the Tennessee game, where he had the worst pick six probably of his life. But also that's a game where he's playing with a grade two separation in his shoulder for 2.5 quarters. So some of that game is hard to judge. And that, what this always was about was that, you know, I just remembered thinking, like, as bad as this started for Matt Ryan when it came to turnovers and sacks and just where the offense was, it was still new to everybody, and it was all about building it, progressing it, and by the time they got to midseason, could they get him comfortable and efficient like he was supposed to be? Could they get the offensive line capable? Could they get Jonathan Taylor going? This is what it was supposed to look like. And what has also happened is they've got Paris Campbell going now, and Paris Campbell really feels like a Matt Ryan guy. And that went away as a receiver, you know, with the change at quarterback. They did not have the timing routes, the throwing guys open the same way. Again, Matt Ryan did not, this past game, did not complete a pass over 15 yards in the air. I think he only attempted a couple of those, but he was 21 of 28, and he had 222 yards and 110 quarterback rating, because this offense is built for that now. You can hit Michael Pittman across the middle and let him kind of run with the ball like a running back, like he always wants to. You can – Kylan Granson is starting to be a little bit of a run-after-catch guy. He had that 32-yarder. And Paris Campbell, that speed is back. And then the Raiders found that out in the worst way with some really bad positioning by their safeties and bad angles on that final play that went 35 yards for a touchdown. And all of a sudden, Paris Campbell, of his last three games – if you were to stretch that as a small sample, three games with Matt Ryan, but if you stretch that over 17 games, it's 136 catches for more than 1,100 yards. That's the kind of player he always needed, that mismatch speed player in the slot to hit on those in-breaking routes the way that he used to with Julio Jones. But now it's rather than win just with, you know, with size, which is that bully ball attitude that Michael Pittman has, Paris Campbell's that guy who can catch it and create the explosive play with the ball in his hands. That's what this offense has to be, because Matt Ryan still, I don't think, is going to be this air it down the field guy. I mean, his arm is still not, it's not what it was 5 years ago, and it would, and even at that level, it was never the most incredible thing in the world. But you have to really be encouraged by the receivers he's playing with, and I throw Kylan Granson in as sort of the fourth guy with Alec Pierce. There's just so much sort of, there's big play potential with getting the ball in the hands of those guys, especially if they can get to a point where teams start stacking the box again. The Raiders played a lot of too high, and I think that opened up a lot of those underneath throws. And it's incredible that Jonathan Taylor still had that long run even against that. That's kind of how lacking the Raiders safeties are. But eventually, if Jonathan Taylor keeps doing that, teams will adjust, and that could open up a little bit more explosive. That's where I think we may see Alec Pierce get going the way he did against single high to beat the Jaguars.
It's interesting, because I think the part coming into the season that the Colts felt and that most people felt was going to need time to develop was the wide receivers, was this the relationship with the passing game. What does it look like with Matt Ryan? How does Pierce fit in? Do they have Paris Campbell? What have they got going on at tight end? That stuff sort of came together quicker than I think most people expected. I mean, after week two is when Pierce started to look pretty good. Not long after that, Campbell started to look pretty good. Week four is when the tight ends showed that if they're given opportunity, they can do some stuff. I think the reason that the offense has been such a disaster this season is just the stuff that they were supposed to be able to rely on, you know, the offensive line specifically and almost totally, because I don't put a lot of the running game issues on Jonathan Taylor so far.
I think it's offensive line and quarterback.
I'm saying, like, in terms of, you know, what you were saying about the, like, they thought they were going to have to build this offense. Building it around the quarterback, like, they were expecting to protect Matt Ryan right away. Mm-hmm. And because they didn't do that, it sort of has minimized the development of these receivers and sort of what they're getting out of these receivers. And that's just sort of how this season started. And if this Raiders game is an indicator of how the offensive line is going to play against better opponents, then that means good things for the offense. The question is, how much does the opponent matter? Because we did see them drop back 58 times against the Jaguars and not get sacked. And then the next week is the week that Ryan got his shoulder separated and had to pick sixes. So it's looked okay before and then not been fine the week after. Same thing with the Washington game. There was only one sack of Ellinger in the Washington game. And it was like, okay, maybe his mobility is going to help. And 9 sacks against New England the very next week. So we got to see it happen. Not even just this week. It's got to be 2, 3, 4 games in a row before you can feel like this is the new norm for the offensive line. Again, the Raiders, people don't want to hear this right now, but it's true. When the Raiders sacked Matt Ryan, when Max Crosby sacked Matt Ryan, that was the first time in 13 quarters that the Raiders had sacked somebody.
Seems pretty good. That explains why they're 2-7.
13 quarters. They had gone 3 full games without a single sack. And that means that they didn't have a play where a quarterback scrambled and ran out of bounds and like a yard behind the line. They didn't have one where a guy fell down at the line of scrimmage. They had nothing. They had no broken plays, nothing like that for more than 3 games. And even on Sunday, that was only one. So now they have one in 16 or 17 quarters, whatever the math is. It was a bad pass rush they faced. And we got to see if this offensive line can do it again and again and again, because we've seen them have okay games before and it didn't translate for the rest of the season. And that's why the Colts are where they are in the middle of this weird transition, where your head coach is gone, you have a new head coach in, the organization keeps saying they're not trying to tank, they're trying to win. That's how we got here, is all this offensive line stuff. And we have to see if it's real.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm still skeptical for some of those reasons. And the offensive line does not stack 2 good games together in a row. But I do think there is some reason to believe that it's getting better. I'll be surprised if this becomes a dominant offensive line. There's just too much to try and fix. It's gone on too long. But there are certain things that I think are working in their favor. Will Fries, as you mentioned, is one of those. What that does, not that Will Fries is a star, but he's pretty solid in pass protection, and it takes away what was really the easiest play for defenses, which was stunts inside. Bill Belichick just killed him with that early in the season. They couldn't even communicate him well. They've got that part, the communication down, and they've got a better pass protector there who's not – I mean, Matt Pryor's he's 343 pounds. He's just not built to catch Matt Judon looping inside. It would be a hard matchup for Will Fries too, but they're more capable. Left tackle, Bernard Raimann, is more capable than he was first game. I mean, this is supposed to get
Raimann
better.
Yeah, Raimann, I think, maybe is the underplayed story. Like, them feeling like they can play him 2 weeks in a row. I know he felt like, even in that horrible Patriots game for the offensive line, which was just 2 weeks ago. I know right now with the Colts, everything ages in dog years. But, it was just 2 weeks ago that the Patriots game happened. And Raimann did give up a sack, at least one in that game.
Does he age in dog years or unicorn
years? I have no idea. I have 3 boys. I know very little about unicorns.
I have 0 boys or girls, but I seem to know a lot about unicorns.
That's, yes, many questions. But I think if they keep Raimann there, if he keeps developing long term beyond this year, beyond whatever's going to happen down the stretch here against a very tough schedule for the Colts, if Bernard Raimann can play left tackle, that is huge for this Colts team. If he can start at left tackle and play well, that's the blueprint is to get him, is to have a draft pick that you can play there and start there on a rookie contract for the next 3 years and let whatever you have to do with some of the other big contracts, either they play out, maybe you have to release somebody, whatever you're going to do, if you have a left tackle who can play on a rookie contract, that would be huge. And honestly, that position, if Raimann, assuming Raimann continues to start, how he develops there is probably the biggest development for this organization going into 2023, 2024, 2025, and beyond.
No doubt, because they're going to have to draft a quarterback at some point, which will require a first-round pick.
This year.
And
do it this year.
And if you don't go to the draft and a first-round pick for your left tackle, it's pretty hard to find one. So they need They need to find something here in Ryman, who was a third-round pick. But he was always going to take some time because, of course, he only played offensive line for a couple of years before this. And then the other thing that I think is – and, yes, the payoff for that is huge because left tackle is the most important position. But also it's going to help if that can feel somewhat secure and static – it's going to help get the most out of Quentin Nelson, who we've not seen this year. But I thought he played his best game on Sunday. Some of those run blocks were really impressive from Quentin Nelson. And what's going to what is happening here, too, is I do think Jeff Saturday is going to have an effect on this offensive line, because a lot of things I've talked about all year long, I didn't like the coaching. I didn't like the attitude and approach and tone of that room. Jeff Saturday is such a different breath of fresh air from the sort of negative and depressed state they've been in all season long. I mean, just the quotes this past week, ever since he got here, before they had a good performance, just from some of those linemen had felt different. And the way Jeff Saturday approached his job is very interesting.
You're talking about, though, from the position coaching level.
Yes.
Because the head coaching level, I don't think that positivity was really the issue.
No. Frank Reich tried really hard to give positive reinforcement, but he had a lot on his plate. He's the offensive play caller. He's the head coach of the team. He then became the offense coordinator for a week, so clearly that was never going the way he wanted. Jeff Saturday has a very different approach. He spent 85% of his week in offensive meetings, so he pretty much said, Gus Bradley, defense is yours. And then during the game, he really just empowered Parks Frazier to be aggressive and be who he is, and he was the play caller. So Jeff Saturday is the head coach, but he's down on the field, and he's giving such trust to those other coordinators that he has, or play callers that he has, that he's on the field and he's kind of watching things from a field level the way an offensive line coach would. And they tried to hire as an offensive line coach. They couldn't get him back when they tried in 2019. They tried to get him in some other kind of capacity this year that I'm guessing would have operated with the offensive line, and they couldn't. So now he's here as a head coach, and it's all been packaged weird, and that's where, you know, the national outrage has been so big, because he went from never doing it to head coach level. But if he's going to have this approach where he's pretty much another offensive line coach who's also managing the game, but really relying on his play callers on the two sides of the ball, but bringing that positive reinforcement and that sort of day-to-day energy, and this is a guy who played 14 years in the league like this. They now have two guys in that offensive line room who played at a high level, Kevin Mawai and Jeff Saturday, but I think they have very different approaches, which I think can balance each other out pretty well. I do think it'll get better. Again, does this mean that, you know, that this line's going to be amazing? I don't know. It's hard to – probably not, because it's hard to picture – Bernard Ryman's made a lot of strides. Will Fries is better than Matt Pryor. I don't think you could expect either of those to just all of a sudden be stars, but they just need to get it capable, because if it's capable, you can let Matt Ryan cook, you can let these receivers make plays with the ball, you can let Jonathan Taylor get healthier and then break plays to the sideline and up and down the field, and they have a defense that can play with an offense. If you can score 25 points, you're going to win more games than you lose, and that's got to be their hope.
Yep. Maybe that's what we're seeing. I just need to see it more. I need to see more. I need to see it, especially against a team like the Eagles that's been so good against the pass. Like, I coming into last week, it was just so stark, the difference in opponents. They had just gotten crushed by the Patriots defense. The Patriots defense was way up there. It was a top six defense in completion percentage allowed, sacks, interceptions. Like, they just took away everything. And then they go up against the Raiders, who are like the exact opposite in all that. And so it was reasonable to expect the offense to be better, regardless of who the head coach was, regardless of what was going on. The offense should have been better last week. The Eagles, I think, are a much better indicator, because the Eagles have 28 sacks this season. They have a gazillion interceptions. Gardner Johnson has 6 by himself. That's more than the entire Colts team. It's more than the Raiders' entire team.
Don't throw a Darius Slay.
And their yards per attempt is super minuscule and has been in just about every game. It's been very consistent for Philadelphia in how they've taken away big plays, limited stuff. Former Colts cornerbacks coach Jonathan Gannon is doing a great job there. They're super deep on that side of the ball. It's just a much better test of how much the coaching change and everything else has affected this than the Raiders were. It just is, and I know nobody really wants to hear that, but I can't get it. Like, it wasn't like the last two opponents were like the 10th best defense and the 20th best defense, and they were sort of close. It was the top of the league and the very bottom of the lead. And that has to end up mattering. You know, like, this is one of the things that, like, you talk about a lot in college was is the opponent. Like, you know, you're in the Big Ten, and one week you play Ohio State, and you look terrible. And then the next week you play Maryland, and you look a lot better. Like, people talk about that all the time in college, about how you can't read too much into that Maryland game. But
I mean, I think the margins
are... We had that kind of separation in terms of just what the defenses have been this year from the Patriots to the Raiders.
Yeah, I don't know if the margin is quite that big. College is pretty monstrous. Like, there, you'll have a situation where there's not a single player in Maryland who would even make the two deep on Ohio State. So I don't
think it's quite that.
Like, but you have a good point. It is different. And there are some other, you know, also, like, they scored 25 points. It was a good offensive game. But, like, let's not act like they went out there and dropped 50 on the Raiders.
Well, there were a couple of plays that looked a lot like what plagued the offense before. There was a fumble on the 20-yard line, like. That's even before like,
it was an interesting throw into Kiki Kuti there, but
all season long, that for whatever reason, the 20 has been where the ball just pops out of the Colts' hands, and it happened again. And then the long sack that Matt Ryan took, that is also something that had been happening
over and over again,
and they ended up missing a field goal because of it. So, like, there was some of the bad DNA of the Colts offense was on display. Now, you can look at it two ways. There's two ways to look at it. There's probably three ways to look at it. Well, one way to look at it, the super positive way, is to say that's just remnants. Everything's fixed. It's going to be fine moving forward. And they're just shaking off some of the last vestiges of the horribleness that was here because Reich was here. The super negative way to look at it is it's just a mirage. And that stuff is an indicator. And then in the middle is probably more, well, let's just see. Let's just see once you get away from the opponent and you play three or four more games, are they still scoring points? Are they getting rid of some of those turnovers? There's a bunch of different ways to look at it. It still is just one game to try to decide whether or not there's been a big change here.
Yeah, and I'm certainly in the middle, and I'm pretty sure you are too. And, like, there are – I've listed a lot of the reasons to be positive. There are also some concerns I have for the offense and the team in general still from that game, which is, number one, I've mentioned in the last podcast, but they had everybody out there. Everybody's healthy, and they're about as healthy as they've been. We don't know if they're going to get that. They probably – it'd be great if they do, but depth has been a major problem at every position, quarterback, wide receiver. You know, Deion Jackson stepped in pretty well as a running back, but notice they did not try and run when he was the only guy that they had, which this team is not built to be good if they don't run the ball well. So they've got to have those guys out there. Those playmakers are very good, but if you're dropping from Alec Pierce to Mike Strawn, Paris Campbell to Kiki Kuti, Matt Ryan to Sam Ellinger, we've seen what that ends up being. The other thing on the other side of the ball we've not really touched on, but concern that came out of this game that's flown for the past couple weeks is the pass rush.
Yeah.
And, like,
how healthy is Quiddy Pay's ankle?
Yeah. And this is to be a defense that if the offense is capable and can get a lead, they've got to close it. Now, they closed it with a Stephon Gilmore pass deflection in the end zone, but that came dangerously close to not working because the pass rush again and again let them hit explosive plays to Devontae Adams, where at some point it didn't really matter how well Stephon Gilmore, Kenny Moore, and other guys were covering because you can't cover all day long. So, yes, Quiddy Pay, you know, he's working through an ankle issue. They lost Tyquan Lewis. But what they really have to get going,
Yannick Ngakoue has not been
those
himself.
Two ends. Yannick Ngakoue, who they say is fight through double teams, I just don't think he's been in the best headspace. But he needs to turn that around a little bit.
Yeah, Bradley said he's been he kind of said he's been chipped. Double team might be strong. The guy who's getting double teamed is Buckner.
Yeah, for sure.
Consistent. No, I'm talking about, like, what Bradley said. Like,
right.
He tried to take some off of Ngakoue by saying he's been chipped, but, like, I watch through the binoculars a lot, like, watch the defensive line. The guy who gets double-teamed most often is Buckner. Sometimes, like, every play.
Yeah. Ngakwe's not getting double-teamed, but he is – at a guy who's 232 pounds, like, chips do start to wear
on
you a little
bit.
Yeah,
but he's got to play through – like, he's got to be – like, if he's going to be that guy, he's got to play through the chip.
Yeah, for sure. He's got to play better. And then Dio Dangbo's got to take the leap. Got to take the leap right now because they need it on the other side of that. If that's what's going on, if they're going to chip – him and they're going to double team Buckner, that means one-on-one on the other side. That guy's got to win. Quiddy Pay was doing it, but he's not out there right now, or he's not healthy right now. Tyquan Lewis at times was doing it, and they think Dio is now versatility role wise
fitting into that Tyquan Lewis role, but he's got to play at that level. So, and if he can do that.
And when he said that yesterday, I was just thinking about, we're taping this on Wednesday, so we talked to the coordinators on Tuesday. When Bradley said that about if Odangbo's playing the Tyquan role, I was like, well, if Quitty's out, that means there's a starting defensive end job not filled. And maybe it's Afadi Odenegbo, but who's been okay in spots but not consistent. Like, it's getting thin. And that goes – I mean, I'll just say it so I make sure that it's out there. Like, that goes to Chris Ballard, like, not accomplishing his goal on the defensive line.
Exactly.
The Eagles, when you look at the Eagles, that is what they – like, what the Eagles are on the defensive line is what Ballard has been saying he wants to build. It's super deep. A lot of guys who can play. The Colts are getting super thin, and we're getting super thin on time.
Yeah,
so we got to get close.
And the last thing I'll say on that,
Clark stood up from his chair. I knew it was time.
I guess my last point on Dio is that they didn't draft him to be the Tyquan Lewis role. They drafted him because they thought he was
They did.
Once healthy. I don't think that's what a first round pick is.
No, they wanted him to play defensive end and defensive tackle and do all that stuff and play, you know, 50-60% of the snaps. That is. To some degree, what his role was, like the production they probably wanted, the production they probably wanted more out of it. But the role and the vision for the role, that's what it was.
If he's the role and he's a 12 sack guy, then fine. But that, I feel like the way that they're packaging it right now is hopefully Dio can step up and fill what we lost in Tyquan Lewis. No, he needs to be more than that because that's what they said he was going to be when they said we can't possibly pass on this guy in the second round and we're going to wait for him to recover because he's got that first round, no doubt about it, dominant pass rushing ability. We need to see more of that. He's been fine, but for this to really come together the way they need it to really get this season going, I think he's got to be a dominant player.
Colts-Eagles coming up on Sunday. We'll have more from the Cover 2 podcast. We'll have a little bit of a different format, I think, in the First Impressions podcast. I had some ideas. But we'll see how the Colts do against the Eagles, and then we'll see where that takes us. For the Colts Cover 2 podcast, I am Joel Erickson. This has been Nate Atkins.